Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is August the 30th in the year that they say is 2016. It is a Tuesday afternoon. I hope that my voice is finding you in relative safety and of a sound mind, considering all we have to deal with in this world. So today, pretty much going to have an open forum after our guest comes on. As I stated yesterday, I did mention that Teresa Smallwood, Miss Teresa Smallwood, would be joining us today. She is a former prosecutor, a former defense attorney. She also used to work at an organization that's here where I'm at, Legal Services of Southern Piedmont. And so she has lived for a time in North Carolina. I don't think she still lives here. And so she got a look at the criminal injustice system from the inside, working at the prosecutor's table as well as working at the defense table. And now she is a speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. If you don't have never heard of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, I would urge you to visit their website, www.leap, that's LEAP.cc. So that's leap.cc. You can also get there by going to copssaylegalize.com. copssaylegalize.com. And as the name would imply that I just stated, Cops Say Legalize, the mission of this organization is to see all drugs legalized. Why? Not because they want people using drugs or on drugs, but they know that drug laws are being used in an unjust fashion to put people into prison who should not be in prison. If you have an addiction problem, that's a health issue. That is not a criminal justice issue. But again, if we go back to Richard Nixon in the 1970s, if we believe what his chief of staff said, he said, and his chief of staff said, they came up with the Drug Enforcement Agency and those drug laws in the 1970s during Nixon's administration as a way to target black people. I think Michelle Alexander has spoken on that, even wrote about it in her book. So that is what Law Enforcement Against Prohibition is about. It's just not former cops or prosecutors or judges. It's all of the above. Criminal defense attorneys, judges, former prison guards. I remember interviewing quite a few people. And so it's not just cops. So we're looking forward to speaking to Ms. Smallwood today. We are going to focus on the story I think I mentioned it last week about the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is based in Denver, Colorado, and they came out with a ruling saying that police cannot legally justify stopping and searching a person based on their residency in a state where cannabis is legal. So that has been a problem with people who may have Colorado license plates, they may have Alaska license plates, any of these states where they have legalized cannabis and stopped the madness of locking up people for using substances and putting them in the prison where they aren't getting any help and do have access to more drugs because the guards will bring it in or other people will smuggle it in. So that has been an issue. And it is welcome news to hear that the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, again, is based in Denver, has ruled that they can't be stopping people based on their residency, based on the fact that they got a license plate on their car and they're visiting your state from another state that has legalized cannabis. So, again, slave catchers, man, I tell you, they stay on their job. They stay on their job. So, again, looking forward to speaking to Miss Smallwood. She should be joining us here. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me call her. I'm supposed to be calling her. All right. So y'all bear with me. All right. Let me just pull up her number and we will get her on the line. I was sitting here waiting on her to call in and I'm supposed to call her. So let's get Miss Smallwood on the phone. Again, after we speak to Miss Smallwood, I do have something on my mind, something on my heart that I want to discuss that's coming out of the Colin Kaepernick story. So stay tuned for that as well. Hello, Miss Smallwood.
Yes.
Hi, this is Scotty. We are on live with Black Talk Radio News, and we are pleased to be able to speak to you today.
I'm excited about speaking with you as well, Scott.
All right. Well, before we get into it, I was just telling the listeners a little bit about your background. So it appears that you used to work and live here in North Carolina, because I'm very aware of legal services of Southern Piedmont. I've known some people that have been clients of theirs, and of course the Children's Law Center. Are you native of North Carolina, or you were just here working and living for that time?
Oh, yes. I was born and raised in Windsor, North Carolina. Spent most of my formative years in the northeastern part of the state. Now, of course, after going to UNC Chapel Hill for my undergraduate work, completing my law degree at North Carolina Central, I moved up to the Central Piedmont, where I did the legal services work in the Charlotte, North Carolina area.
Yes, I'm just right outside of Charlotte. I'm in a little town. I don't really live in a town. I live outside the city limits of Mount Holly, which is in between Charlotte and Gastonia.
Oh, I know Gastonia well. In fact, that was one of my assignments when I was with Legal Services. We had an outlying office in Gastonia.
Right, right. I'm aware of their office. And so as I was telling the listeners, if I'm not mistaken, you not only one time worked as a assistant district attorney sitting at the prosecutor's table, but did you also get into, you did become a defense attorney too, right?
Yes, in fact, most of my legal career was spent as a defense attorney. I did the prosecutor's work for about 3 years, almost four, and then went to the defense side, and I stayed there until 07 when I stopped practicing.
Okay. So you've seen it from both sides of the table.
Oh, yes. In fact, I tell people all the time, I went from the side of winning all the time as a prosecutor to the side of losing most all the time as a defense attorney. But obviously, I say that tongue-in-cheek because we had certainly some victories along the way.
Well, that's an interesting comment to make. And what would you attribute? I mean, why would you say the winning side? I mean, that I would think in my mind when you stated that, where I thought in my mind when you stated that, is how the system is stacked against. It's not a fair system. It's not a level playing field. Because here in Gaston County, we're still, I don't remember this being an issue when you were here, but it's an issue now where they defense attorneys, like if you go get a public defender, you have to pay for those now, and they are not funding the public defender's office like they, you know, the prosecutors get funded by the state, and that's a problem.
Oh, it is a terrible problem. I could spend volumes with you talking about what I saw as complete disparities across racial lines throughout my career. But suffice it to say that, yes, the deck is stacked against minorities in any kind of judicial conquest. I don't care whether it's civil or criminal. There is something that will always be a detractor to your capacity to get justice. And to some degree, my jaded perspective, and I will admit that it probably is jaded because I spent so much time in it, but my perspective is born out of the fact that if you don't have a dollar, if your justice can't be bought, and I mean that literally and figuratively, you don't get it. So in this country, if you have enough affluence, then we'll create a defense for you called the affluenza defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the nature of the beast. But the reality is still this. In every other country that I've traveled to, there's no system that is comparable. So as it relates to how we fit into the world scheme, it's still the best system I know. But there are reasons for us to be very careful about how we critique it, because uninterrogated white privilege has caused a lot of people to really become criminals who didn't have to be, had they been on an even playing field.
How long have you been working with law enforcement against prohibition, and what led you to join with them in their mission?
I have been a certified speaker for a very short period of time, but my justice work proper started at age 16.
Okay.
and I will say that I became interested because I was there as a witness for the congressional briefing for UNGAS. And UNGAS is basically an acronym for the United Nations General Assembly Special Session. That special session is coming up soon, but our Congress wanted to be briefed by people who were on the ground about why the drug war itself should be approached in a different way.
Okay.
And so I went to Capitol Hill to give testimony regarding my experiences in Washington, D.C., where largely the marijuana arrests were leveled in two particular zip codes. And those zip codes were heavily populated by African-Americans and brown people. And so essentially we were able to establish for them that there has to be a different approach, because this war that you call a war on drugs is literally a war on communities, a war on families, a war on individuals that basically is not helping anybody. It's not helping the concept of how we deal with drugs or how we deal with people who are addicted to drugs, and it's most definitely not helping our society.
You know, you mentioned that you may have a jaded perspective, but I have a jaded perspective too. I just really have no faith in the system whatsoever. Now, I do not claim to be suffering like many of the people I read stories about. I'm in, again, a rural area that's sparsely populated. It could be months before I even see a cop car or anything like that. So, I don't read a bunch of stories about police brutality, and most of the people that's in the jail are white males. Usually have to do with heroin or what's that other drug that's pretty popular with them? Crystal meth or something. And it's not anything that affects me personally, although it has affected family members in the past who I felt like were unjustly imprisoned. But this is why I'm jaded. Now, I've been doing news radio since 2007, and we created this platform in 2008, and I'm heavily focusing on anything that has to do with the prison industry in this country, or we call it modern day slavery, because the 13th Amendment clearly states that slavery is okay as if it's being dispensed as a punishment for crime. That's in the U.S. Constitution. But when I talk about the drug war, and I stay informed about it, and I know that the DEA cut a deal with the Sinaloa drug cartel to allow them to smuggle drugs all the way up to Chicago, and you know the drugs didn't just stay in Chicago, and the only thing they had to do was feed them information on their rivals. Well, if I was a drug cartel dealer or leader, I would take that deal too. And so then you allowing these drugs, and this came out in major publications. Actually, the story was broke by the largest publication in Mexico. And so when I see that happening, when I see these DEA agents being sent home from Colombia because they're having sex parties paid for by drug cartels, I just get so cynical, Ms. Smallwood, that I just don't trust anything that come out of any politician's mouth when I see that going on.
Scotty, I have to understand, your perspective goes really deep. And it really hits the what I call deep structures of our very structural oppressions as a people. But more importantly, when you say it doesn't affect me personally, I understand what you're saying. I understand that from various perspectives. And there are many rationalities that both of us could articulate about why our feelings are as they are. But the reality still remains. A good number of our people are targeted every single day. And they're targeted by unjust application of the laws that's on the books. So even if we don't deal with the 13th Amendment and the whole idea behind the kinds of imprisonments that come to justify a modern-day slavery, even if we just deal with those legitimate rules that are supposed to protect us because we're individual citizens mm-hmm. of these United States, what I find is that it is overbearing to my sensibilities of freedom and my ideology of freedom when you tell me that the rule applies and then you misappropriate it
right.
for the purpose of putting me, because of what I look like, into a jail cell. And that's what I'm finding to be as inappropriate as some of the brutality. Although I don't certainly try to measure that as being the same impact. Clearly, I don't want young black men or women to be shot down for no reason. But when their rights are violated, when somebody decides because of what they look like or what car they're driving or how it is that they're presenting themselves on the highway, that's a basis for abridging their very established constitutional rights, that too becomes a major issue for me.
Right, right. And like I tell people, I don't have to be suffering something personally to care about it, because I've had people say, well, what do you care? You ain't never been in prison, and, you know, you don't seem to be doing nothing that'll land you there. But I know that I can come across the wrong cop. I could be traveling, be in the wrong area. And there are plenty of stories of innocent people now being let out of prison because of either, you know, the cops might have planted something on them or prosecutorial misconduct. So, I mean, I care about it because it's injustice. And like Dr. King
Absolutely.
Said, a threat to justice, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So I'm
Absolutely.
Not trying to wait till it come to my town. So,
and none of us are free until all of us are free.
Exactly, exactly. Now, you mentioned a car, and that ties into, that's a good segue to the specific story that we were scheduled to speak with you today. And it is a story I reported on last week, but I would like to get your perspective, and that is the federal court, the 10th Circuit out of Denver, which recently ruled that police officers do not have any kind of justification to be targeting people simply because of their license plate may be from a state that has legalized cannabis. So, I mean, that right there, see what I call that right there, Miss Smallwood, that's slave catching. They're targeting people, you know, based on where they come from, because they legalized something and so you haven't. So you're just looking to fill quotas, in my opinion.
Without doubt. I must agree with you. I think your assessment is absolutely spot on. And when you read the decision that was written or handed down by the circuit judge, you realize that unless you got principled people on the judiciary,
right,
things like this get passed through. Because this isn't the first go-round for at least one of those officers. At least one of those officers had done this before. So they had already gone through the use of state-sanctioned resources to take on this issue and give themselves the opportunity to abridge someone's rights before. And you know, they will tell you, and it's statistically something you can prove, that it's very expensive for a state's attorney to take these issues on when they have no merit. But they stood by this officer, carried it all the way up to the circuit level, and it came back down. And now here we are with this same officer doing the very same thing. And the court laid it out very clearly. Listen, you should have known from the first time that you didn't have what we call a particularized basis for establishing a reasonable suspicion that somebody had created or committed a crime, or that some type of criminal activity was ongoing. And you know you don't have it, but what you want to do is profile people and then try to justify it under your own officer's alleged immunity. And so I think what's happening now is that even the higher courts, the appeal courts, are realizing that they're going to have to enforce some parts of the laws, particularly the case laws, that give people a way out when the rules themselves, when they are established rules, precedent rules, that are being abridged on the ground.
I mean, that's clearly, in my opinion, a violation of Fourth Amendment rights.
No doubt. It's a clear, I mean, the officers clearly, I mean, went well beyond it. Had the man said, yes, you can search me, that's one thing.
Right.
But he didn't. He refused, and that was his constitutional right to do.
Please
state
that again.
They had nothing else that they were supposed to do except let him go.
Ms. Smallwood, would you please restate that? Because, again, you worked as an attorney, you know the law, and, you know, I used to laugh, but it's not funny. And I don't watch a whole lot of TV anymore, but you probably heard of that program called Cops, right? Where they're filming them out in the field doing, you know, what they do. And so they would pull somebody over and they would ask the question, may I search your car? Can I search your car? You know, however they form that question. And the person would say yes, and I'll be yelling, no! Don't give them permission! You don't have to make them get a warrant. But I think a lot of people, they are, and again, I don't try to paint all officers with a broad brush. I shouldn't do that with anyone. But there's just too many, it's just too many instances of this happening. Okay, so I say, no, you don't know. There are too many stories of them planting drugs on people. And, you know, in Alabama, they just uncovered a story came out this year where you had the narcotic squad with this police department in Alabama who had for years been planting guns and drugs on black men in Alabama. I think they had caused over 1,000 black men to be put in prison. So a lot of people don't understand their rights. Or they think that every officer is there to be their friend, and they don't know what that human being may be up to. And so please inform people about their rights on when they get pulled over.
I will say to you that reading directly from the court's opinion, any investigative detention has to be temporary. It can last no longer than necessary to effectuate the purpose of the stop. And the scope must be carefully tailored to its underlying justification. So what that means is, if he stopped you because your tail light was out, that's the only basis. If he stopped you because he couldn't see your license plate, which was the case in this particular stop in Kansas, then once he validated that you had a license plate, but it just wasn't visible, if he's going to issue a ticket for that, that's one thing. But there was nothing to issue a ticket behind in this case. And once that was done, unless he got valid consent from the person he was detaining, he went beyond the scope, or they went beyond the scope and duration of the investigative detention, and it could not be expanded unless the officers could articulate a particularized an objective basis for suspecting that the person they had stopped was involved with criminal activity. And see, this is the part that bothers me, is that officers already know, they stand on the side of the road realizing that they got a one-up on people. And that is that people generally are going to have a default setting when it's an officer of the law. They're going to be afraid, they're going to be compliant, and they're going to show that they are intimidated. So if an officer asks you, may I search, they're going to assume that they mean I'm going to search. And therefore, if you say no, that somehow shows your guilt to something. Mm-hmm. But people who know their rights can say it firmly, no, sir, you may not. And they're supposed to be able to go. Now, if they are not allowed to go, they may have to end up just where this Mr. Vasquez case ended up, in a civil court where the court had to determine, was it right for them to keep doing what they did?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the situation. And obviously, that is the risk that people take, because unfortunately, in the climate that we're living in, it doesn't matter whether you operate in politics of respectability and say, okay, officer, yes, sir, I have nothing to hide, mm-hmm. or if you demand that your rights be honored. Depending on who it is, where you are, the outcome can be as much as have a nice day, ma'am, or as little, or I should say, as much as death, or have a nice day, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was a young 20-something, I might have been 21, 22. No, actually, I was about 24 when I was stationed in Fort Huachuca. I was in the military. I was stationed at Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And I really wasn't into politics or the law like I am now. I wasn't really involved in these sort of issues that I'm involved in now, much later, you know, 30 years or so later. But this officer, I had a Celica GT. It's a little sports car. It had pop-up headlights, and one of the headlights had a habit of getting stuck. And, you know, I would have the fog lights on. It's not dark yet. It's just dusk. So I, you know, turned the little fog lights on, and so the headlights still would pop up. But one of them didn't pop up. So that was the basis of his stop. So I said to him, I asked him, why did you pull me over? And he said, your headlight doesn't seem to be working properly. I said, oh, I can fix that if you allow me to fix that. Allow me to get out of my car and fix it. So he says, go ahead. So I get out. I just hit the light with my fist, and it pops up. And I was like, okay, thank you, officer. Is there anything else? And then he was like, yeah, can I search your car? And then I'm thinking, and I said in my mind, that sounds like a question. That don't sound like a demand or order or anything like that. That sounds like a question. I wonder what he gonna do if I say no. So I said no. And so first I asked him, I said, well, why you want to search my car? He said, because you might be a drug dealer. I said, don't you see the military base stickers on my car? I'm in the military, sir. I'm not a drug dealer. And he was like, that don't matter. And so then I said, no, you can't search my car. He didn't even say have a nice day. He just got in his car and left.
Well, at least he realized what the stops were on his actions. Not all of them do, and some of them do understand, but simply push the envelope
and go and just do whatever they want to do.
Yeah. Because the reality is this, Scotty: if they go forth and they find something, the find itself exonerates them most of the time.
Yeah,
whether
but
they
wouldn't
did
that
it
be
legally or not?
But what? I'm sorry. Say that last part again.
So what I'm saying is, officers are gambling. They know they're gambling. But the truth of the matter is, they have these suspicions of people.
Okay.
And if they go forth and they do something that allows them to find something, despite the fact that they broke somebody's or abridged someone's constitutional rights, the reality is the find itself will always exonerate them.
Now,
so if there was something underneath those things that were covered up in this man's car,
right,
like drugs, the fact that they found those drugs would be enough for them in some way or another to establish an acceptability of what they've done.
To justify violating somebody's rights?
Absolutely.
Right. I was going to say, you know, even if they do that, which they have, it actually happened to a cousin of mine. He lives in New York City. and he went through a roadblock, and they asked him if they could search his car, and he told them no, and they searched his car anyway, and then came out with a little small amount, what we would call a dime bag of weed. And then he got issued a ticket for that, a summons for that. You know, it wasn't enough to arrest him. He said it wasn't even his. He believes they planted it because he said his stuff was in the trunk. And so I'm just being honest and truthful here. He said his stuff was in the trunk. That cop must have planted that in my back seat. So when he does get to court, they throw it out based on the Fourth Amendment violation. He never gave them permission, and they didn't get a warrant. So they ended up tossing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that's what I want to stress to people is, even if you don't have anything to hide, you should still exercise your right. That don't mean you got to be belligerent and say, hell no, you can't search my car. No, sir, you can't search my car. I don't have anything to hide, but you can't search it. And so if they do what they do anyway, if you get one of those trying to set somebody up, at least that'll give a defense attorney something to work with on your behalf if it was an illegal search.
I totally agree, Scotty.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ms. Smallwood, I want to thank you for chatting with us today. Do you do any kind of events? Is there anything you got going on personally that you would like, a business or anything like that you would like to inform our listeners about?
At the present moment, I am a PhD student at Chicago Theological Seminary, writing my PhD in theology. And so at this moment, I do not. But I would love to be able to keep our phone lines open and to be in a position where I share with you whatever I'm doing, because I'm doing justice work, and that means working for workers to get minimum wages that are living wages. Mm-hmm. I'm working with the LEAP organization to try and do drug reform, and I'm also working with a Just Harvest, which is a community kitchen. So yes, there are plenty of things that will be coming up, but at the present moment, all is well.
Well, our door is certainly open to you anytime. All you got to do is shoot me an email, and we will schedule you to come on. I love building these type of relationships with people who have information that is beneficial to our listening audience, but more than that, not just those who talk, but who walk the walk and who are out here trying to do something about these various issues plaguing poor, disadvantaged, and black people. So thank you again for the work that you're doing. I really appreciate LEAP. I've had a long relationship with them, spoken to, interview many of the speakers there, and I will continue this because this is a very important fight. It is a fight for justice, and so I'm down with it. I'm always down with justice, and I just want to thank you for the work that you're doing towards that end in helping us attain a more just world for everyone. You have a great day, ma'am.
And Scotty, you have a great day, and thank you so much. If any of your listeners want a LEAP presentation, please, we're here for you. Thank you so much.
You have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Miss Smallwood, North Carolina native homegirl, Miss Teresa Smallwood, former prosecutor, spent most of her time on the side of the defense table representing people to try to keep them out of slavery. And so she has a very interesting story and full of information and experience in this area. So I'm going to take a station identification break, and then when we come back on the other side, I want to talk about something that I'm not going to really say that is bothering me, because I don't allow things to fester and, you know, get to the point where I'm losing sleep over it. But it is on my mind. It is on my heart. I'm kind of perturbed at people who want to cast aspersions on light-skinned black people like myself, who want to cast aspersions upon black people who I clearly identify as black, but because they got a white parent, like one of my best friends and comrades, Max Parthas. I'm just so tired of it. I'm tired of it. I have done nothing to harm black people. nothing, you know, that I'm conscious of that I've done to harm black people. And I feel like that some of these black people that want to cast suspicion my way because I'm light skinned, because I'm not as melanated as some of my brothers and sisters, like, oh, something wrong with me, or I'm not black enough, or even these mixed race black people. I'm just sick of it. Again, I understand. I'm not angry at all. I understand that we got a lot of mental sickness going on. I also understand when captives, what do they call it? The Stockholm syndrome, when the captives or the victims start taking on the characteristics of their oppressor. I'm seeing that among black people. And it has been said that black people can't practice racism, but I used to say that, but I don't believe that no more. Now, if I'm incorrect, somebody correct me. And I'm going off of the definition of racism as provided by, as I read from Mr. Neely Fuller, where he says that racism is the mistreatment of anyone based on their skin color. Now, if you mistreating somebody because they light skin, if you mistreating somebody because they got a white parent, then you practicing racism. Because that's what racism is, when you mistreat somebody based on their skin color. And I'm tired of it. And I'm not going to take the disrespect. I'm not going to take it from anyone. And I'm not going to be quiet when I see people who are standing on the side of justice. They don't have to say anything. They could just get all the butter biscuits they can and never say a word about racism or police brutality or slavery or any mistreatment of black people. And for them to be attacked for engaging in counter-racist behavior just based on their skin color, how are you any different than a racist cracker? You ain't no different. Again, I've always stated, you know, I ain't looking to unify with all black people because all black people ain't in their right mind and they ain't all for us. They ain't all trying to practice justice. So I don't see any logical reason that light-skinned black people or mixed race black people should be mistreated by other black people. I mean, I see people out there with two black parents that's going hard for white supremacy, for upholding the system, going hard for, and they got two black parents. So obviously, skin color injustice are not mutual. Does cause you black, you practice justice or you believe in justice and you live your life by a code that promotes justice, but then out of your mouth you want to talk trash about somebody cause they light skin. Now I could see it, I could understand it, not saying I would agree with it, but I could understand if you're talking about somebody who is engaging in behavior to harm black people. I could see casting aspersions or suspicion or, you know, just saying what they're doing is wrong. But see, we got people that don't even want to even talk about black people with two black parents that's helping the system of racism maintain itself. We're supposed to just ignore them. But then you want to talk trash about somebody because they got a white parent and the only thing they did was speak out against racism and you attacking them for that? Oh, you're not attacking them for speaking out against racism, but you want to attack them. You didn't say nothing about them until they stood up. So what kind of damn sense does that make? Again, I'm not angry. I stay passionate, though, but I'm not angry. But I had to defriend a black person Now, again, I don't like promoting Mr. Zuckerberg's platform, but I'd use his platform to get information as a news source. I will scan it, but I'm not using it like I used to since we built our own community, btrcommunity.com. But I was on there today scanning the news feed just to see if it's something that I missed that did not come through Google News Feed. Because obviously Google News Feed is operated by a suspected racist. And they may not always include the things that I need to know about in terms of what we talk about on this network. So, but this person shared a story concerning Colin Kaepernick, which I discussed yesterday, about Rodney Harrison, a former NFL player, who gonna come out of his mouth and say Colin Kaepernick wasn't black. Now, Cleo Monago is the person I'm talking about, who the last time Jesse Williams spoke up, Jesse Williams, the actor, who was given some kind of entertainment award for whatever, I don't remember because I don't watch that type of stuff, but I heard about his comments and I later, you know, pulled up the clip of his comments. But I remember Cleo Monago focusing on the fact that Jesse Williams is able to say what he said because of some kind of light skin privilege and having a white parent. So, I mean, I said something to him then. I was like, oh, so you got a problem with light-skinned black people and you think that we got some kind of privilege? Like, you know, it's all coffee and cream for us or something? Like, we don't suffer from racism? Like, we don't get mistreated? But again, you know, this goes to show they might be mistreated the most because they're getting it from both sides. If they trying to practice justice. Now, if they going along with the system of injustice, the system of racism, then, you know, obviously the racists ain't going to have a problem with that. But as soon as they declare their blackness and speak out against injustice, then the racists want to attack them. And then you got confused black people attacking them. Instead of focusing on racism, they want to focus on that person's parent, whether or not he got two black parents or not. Instead of focusing on what he said, you want to focus on him being light-skinned. Again, I'm not angry. Not angry at you because I understand or overstand that there are a lot of brain-damaged black folks in this country. Brains damaged by the constant oppression that they live under. Traumatic stress disorder. I don't call it PTSD. Post means it's over with. The trauma's over. The trauma's ongoing. So I know it's a lot of reasons that black people may feel this about this or about that. Who knows, you know, maybe a light-skinned person did something to them or I don't know, turned down Mr. Monago's advances or something. I don't know. But I do know it's wrong to paint everybody with a broad brush. Everybody black ain't for you. Everybody non-black is not against you. We should be basing our judgment on what a person does. And I don't understand other than intentional confusion of why some of these people want to focus on Colin Kaepernick's parentage instead of focusing on the fact that Colin Kaepernick said that there's nothing to be proud of in this country. Area code 561, you're on Black Talk Radio News. Thank you for chiming in. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hey, what's going on, Scotty? It's CM, South Florida.
Hey, you usually on the other line. This is the first time you calling on the studio line. You sound a whole lot clearer. What's on your mind, CM?
Man, I'm just hanging in there. I was, you know, I called in on the other line, but I can't hear anything. Like, it'll come through with the prompt at the beginning, and then
we got disconnected. I see what's going on. Thank you for alerting me. I see where we got disconnected. So if you'll bear with me, let me get reconnected back to that conference line. Thanks for calling in and letting me know. These things happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm. This service is provided.
No problem. I'm going to hang up and I'm going to call back on the other line.
No. You can
access
go ahead and
if
you have some.
This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
I'm sorry. If you have some comments to share, go ahead and share them now.
Well, actually, I wanted to hear your comments on the Colin Kaepernick story.
Okay.
And I wanted to chime in on that. I wanted to hear your point of view, and then I wanted to chime in.
All right. Well, if you want to call back on the other line, go mm-hmm. ahead. I'm going to go ahead and take a short break right now and then share some of the related news and continue to tell you and the rest of the listeners why this bothers me so much. Because
it's really bothering me, and I have some strong comments for it. So I'm gonna click off, and I'm gonna call on the other line.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you too, Scott. Bye.
All right, I'm sorry about that. Okay, I see what's going on. All right, I just disconnected myself again. Wow, let me use the other flash phone, and that one will not disconnect.
This service is provided in high definition by free conference call hd.com.
This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
Wow. Skype just acts crazy sometimes, but I think that was on me. I think I hung up on everybody. So apologies if you were in the conference line and you got disconnected or you couldn't hear anything. That is on me. I made a user error. All right. So, again, you know, this deeply impacts. I feel deeply. Again, I'm not angry. I'm not going to let anyone get under my skin like that. But I was not raised to take disrespect from anyone. And, you know, I hear all this talk about black unity. So who you trying to unify with? I mean, is there some kind of color test? You got a piece of cloth or something, a black piece of cloth, and we got to match up, our skin got to match up to that piece of cloth before we can be considered black or something? You know, well, I mean, that's just crazy, man. But I believe it's intentional. It's intentional, deliberate confusion and division. I'm tired of hearing people talk, oh, black unity, but then soon as a self-identified black person who just may be light-skinned or have a white parent identifies as black and shows their solidarity, then you, instead of you focusing on the racist cracker, you want to focus on that person and make it about them when they trying to help you. Unless you telling them you can handle it all on your own and you don't need a light-skinned black people standing up for you. Well, I'm going to say this. I don't stand up for a skin color. I do point out that people are mistreated, particularly black people are mistreated because of anti-blackness and what have you. But I want slavery to end because it's wrong. I don't want to see anybody enslaved. I don't base justice on whether or not a person is worthy of justice based on their skin color. That ain't how justice works. That's how injustice works. Now, again, I've heard people say that black people don't have the power to practice racism. And I used to believe that. I even co-signed onto that, even though in the back of my mind there was always this doubt that didn't seem logical. Because I'm, as a business owner, even though it's a nonprofit, it's still a business. I can certainly turn down white students who want to get an internship with us. I can certainly say, you know what? No, this only for black kids. I don't want no white interns working for Black Talk Media Project or interning with Black Talk Media Project. I can certainly practice racism in that way. Because I have the power over the operations of the Black Talk Media Project. Now, institutional racism, when we're talking about institutional racism, we're talking about the racism that's being practiced by governments. Government, where it is government policy, whether that's policy that is written down or whether it is a policy that they implement with a wink and nod. It's an unspoken policy, but this is how we gonna operate. Institutional racism, that's different. An individual can mistreat someone based on their skin color. And although I look at it as minor, it wasn't no big deal. But when Cleo Monago blocked me on Facebook, first he deleted my comments, and my comments weren't even directed at him. They were directed at Rodney Harrison, talking about Colin Kaepernick can't speak on it because he ain't even black. He don't know nothing about people of color's experience. You obviously didn't listen to Colin Kaepernick give examples of where the slave catchers broke into his house after white people called it on him and called the police on him and his black friends. And he said that they just called the police on us because we're black. So he self-identifies as a black person. And he said the slave catchers didn't even knock on the door or nothing. They came in with the guns drawn, pointing their guns at us. So Rodney Harrison obviously didn't even pay attention to what Colin Kaepernick had to say about instances of racism being practiced against him. But again, Colin Kaepernick in the first place said, this ain't about me. This ain't about nothing I've suffered, even though the reporters tried to make it about him, asking him questions, had this ever happened to you? He was like, yes, I've been mistreated. I felt like I was ill-treated because of the color of my skin and what have you. And he gave that example I just gave you, but he said, this ain't about me. He said, I'm living a life of luxury. I'm making money playing. I'm paraphrasing what he said. I done made millions of dollars playing a sport. I'm living the life of luxury. So I'm not doing this because of anything I'm suffering from. I'm doing this because I cannot look out there in the streets and see these black bodies and then not say nothing and then look at myself in the mirror. Again, who the hell is Rodney Harrison to speak on somebody else's experience? When Rodney Harrison ain't been nothing since I've known about this guy, since I've seen him on these sports talk radio shows or sports television programming and whatnot. This dude is got the anti-black chip himself. He always siding with the racist suspect. He always got something bad to say about some black person that racist suspects is saying something bad about. He always co-signing on to it. So as far as I know, Rodney Harrison got two black parents. So what's his damn problem? If having a white parent is a problem for Colin Kaepernick, what is Rodney Harrison's problem? And he got two black parents. He a little bit on the light-skinned side, but he got two black parents. Now he want to say Colin Kaepernick not even black. First of all, you ain't in charge of nothing. The way I, you know, to hear, and it's true to a certain extent. But we certainly are not running the system. We ain't in charge of the system. So Rodney Harrison, you don't get to decide who's black. You ain't got no power. And again, I mean, this just touches me in a way because I'm light skinned. I got two black parents, but I got mulattoes in my ancestral family tree. And my grandsons could be classified as quote unquote mulatto or mixed race. I'm not no pure African. I have Scottish people in my bloodline. I have Cherokee Indians in my bloodline, and I most certainly have African people in my bloodlines. My grandsons have Hawaiian, Chinese, Samoan, African, and one of them, father, actually looks a lot like Colin Kaepernick. He really does. He looks like, and he has a white parent. And his white mother ain't even in this life and ain't been in this life. He was raised by his very, very melanated black father. And he went to school with my daughter, and he hung with black kids. He identifies as a black person. So I take it personal when y'all start talking that crap. I find it disrespectful. I find it illogical. I find it to be without merit. Do y'all talk that same crap about Malcolm X? Malcolm X wasn't no pure African. His mama was a quote-unquote mulatto. She was half white. And from reading his biography, she certainly didn't get no light-skinned privilege. I think they ended up putting her in the crazy house. Mistreated her and her children. Now, I don't know Huey Newton, one of the co-founders of the Black Panther Party, and everybody, you know, most black people will give credit to the Black Panther Party for being, you know, very involved in the black liberation movement. Now, I don't know if Huey Newton got a white parent. I don't know if Angela Davis got a white parent. But they are very, very, very light-skinned. You got a problem with what they did and stood up and all of that? See, again, you know, I'm not mad. I understand there are a lot of confused people out there, a lot of brainwashed people out there, a lot of brain-damaged people out there, and it's all due to racism. But I'm not going to tolerate it. I'm not going to sit here on the sidelines and keep my mouth shut to get along with some of these more melanated people than me. I ain't your enemy. I ain't done a thing to harm you. Not since I've come into consciousness and got my behind out the U.S. military when Malcolm X made me see that I was a tool of racism. That's what I don't get. Y'all want to talk crap about somebody with a white parent or cause they light skin, and you going hard for white supremacy. You going hard. But you'll make excuses. You'll make excuses and say you ain't got no choice but to be in the U.S. military. You'll make excuses and be like, I'm just going to keep my head down because I got mouths to feed, so I'm not going to testify or give evidence on behalf of another black person being mistreated on the job. There's no solidarity whatsoever. But you get on the internet and you talk all that trash. You cowards, man. I'm sick of cowards. You are not going to disrespect me. You're not going to disrespect my grandchildren. You're not going to disrespect my friends. And I'm just going to be quiet about it. And like I told Cleo Monago, and the reason he blocked me on Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook, because I said you as a so-called same-sex gender-loving or same-gender-loving black man, a homosexual, you should be the last one trying to talk anything bad about somebody else. You need to shut the hell up. You ain't got nothing to say about Jesse Williams. You ain't got nothing to say about Colin Kaepernick. When I have defended you and people like you from mistreatment based on your sexual preferences, because I see some of you as victims being raped by children. I mean, being raped as children. Infected with all kind of spiritual diseases and what have you. Biologically, you may have been under chemical attack as a child or whatnot, and it got your biology all screwed up. Then you won't sit up on Mark Zuckerberg's platform and talk about, I got some light skin privilege or something like that. You can go to hell with that. And I ain't trying to unify with these confused people. If you got a problem with me being light skinned, you got a problem with my mixed grandchildren, then you got a problem. I don't. Minimize conflict by minimize contact. Don't have nothing to do with me or anything that I have put my hand to create on the behalf of black people. Tired of this, man. It's not enough that we got racist crackers we got to worry about, but we got to worry about proxy racists and then black folks that want to sow confusion and division in the community based on stuff that's out of people's control. I ain't got no control on my melanation level, and I'm not going to go out and get no melanin injections just so you will accept me. You either accept me as I am or kick fucking rocks down the road. I'm going to take a short station identification break. I'm going to hit the phone lines if anybody has anything to say. Again, I'm not mad. This is how I normally talk. I'm a passionate person. I have very strong views. I'm wrong some of the time. I never claim to be right about everything, but there are some things that I know is wrong, and I'm not going to go along with it. So we're going to take this station identification break, kick some God Life beats from our brother Sincere Naquari, and then we'll come back. I'll hit the phone lines. I pretty much gotten out of my system what I needed to get out. Again, I'm not angry at these people. I'm glad you let me know where you stand. I'm not looking to unify with every person based on their skin color. I'm trying to end slavery. I'm trying to help people implement a system of justice. If you ain't down with that, kick rocks. Kick rocks down the damn road. We'll be back on the other side. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
On this relief, brothers and sisters, you can see many concepts where they came in, as I said, like scavengers and picked different pieces. On this particular relief, you can see where the Western world, through Judaism, took a piece of a concept of the creation story from. You can see where the Greek philosophers took a concept of Greek philosophy from. And you can also see where Christianity took a concept, European Christianity took a concept from. So let's break it down. Fashioning man on the potter's wheel out of clay. This is where Judaism took a portion of this to make up their Genesis story with the Sanhedrins around 250 BC. From this relief right here of God fashioning man and woman on the potter's wheel. And they took other concepts of Atum from Heliopolis creation story or the city of On to make up their Adam as a man when actually it was Atum the son. see Judaism took God Kanun, fashioned man out of clay and called him Jehovah. Notice the God Kanun. We see European Christianity took from the goddess Isis and Horus and made up the European, again, let me express, the European version of Mary and Jesus. Copied directly from these reliefs right here. So you got Greek philosophy, where he took from Tahuti and called it Hermes Trismegistus. You got the Jehovah Genesis creation story and the Bible, where they took from Kanun, fashioning man on the potter's wheel out of clay. And they turned it into making man out of clay, Adam out of clay. And you also got Christianity right here showing Isis lactating or breastfeeding the holy child Horus, who was born of immaculate conception and virgin birth. Three concepts.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Let me get ready to wrap up the program. Again, if you have any questions or comments, I'm not looking for agreement, you know. I'm trying to see things logically. So if I have put forth something that seems illogical, help me out. Point it out. I'm not a perfect person. I'm full of flaws, man. My kids will tell you that. My mom will tell you that. My siblings will tell you that. I'm far from being a perfect person. But I do try to deal in logic. So I said anything illogical, anything that you have to add. But by all means, give us a call. The telephone number is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Hit star 61 to comment on air. The studio line is open, 704-951-5030. Again, I know, you know, people have said things about, for example, mixed race children. Oh, you got to really watch them. You got to keep your eye on them because they're very confused and this and that. You don't know that. You don't know who raised them. You don't know how they was raised. And from my study of history, mixed race, there were mixed race slaves in this country. In fact, I have gone back as far back as 450 years. And while people want to deny it, I don't care. I don't go along to get along. I look for truth. I look for the facts. And there are people who want to deny that Irish people were ever held slaves in this country. They most certainly were. I come across the records and stuff. And they even would mate African males, enslaved African males with enslaved Irish females to produce mulattoes. You know why? Because the white races found the mulatto female to be more desirable to him than the African female. Sally Hemings, Thomas Jefferson's sex slave, she was a mulatto, even though people don't want it. They just say she's black. Oh, that the black descendants of Thomas Jefferson and all of that. She was a mixed race. These people have suffered as long as anybody. Racism has affected them as much as anybody. And where all this light-skinned privilege is coming from, I don't know, because I certainly haven't been afforded it. Anything I've gotten, I believe I've gotten on my own merits. I don't think any white racist has given me any kind of favorable treatment based on my skin color. That has certainly not been the case. Now, I'm speaking about me specifically. I don't know, maybe some other light-skinned black people out there, but again, it don't matter about your skin color if you're willing to kiss white behind, if you're willing to be down with the system of mistreatment of melanated people. Well, you could be in the club too. You will get privilege. You can be like Terrence Clarence Thomas. They'll even let you, don't even care if you got a white wife. The racists will love you because you helping them carry out their agenda. So you don't even have to, you know, whether or not you practice justice ain't got nothing to do with your skin color. Got to do with your principles and your values. Let's go to the telephone, area code 561. Thank you for hanging so patiently as I'll keep dropping the lines. But go ahead with your question or comment.
Hey, it's me, Scotty. It's Sin. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you, Sin.
Yeah, I think he was about to say the right name. Sound like he was about to say Terrence Howell, but, you know, Clarence Thomas is pretty much the same thing in my view. Yeah, that kind of bothered me, too. Not kind of. That's what bothered me about the Colin Kaepernick, Jesse Williams, you know, as well as other, you know, light-skinned, considered non-white people making comments about, you know, the atrocities and the brutality that's going on, the terrorism, let's call it for what it is, the terrorism that's going on in this country. And, you know, it's they can't speak out about it because they ain't black. Or they're not black enough. Or they can't come from a certain perspective because their color isn't fitting towards to the people around. And I always just say that has nothing to do with anything. That has nothing to do with nothing. The point about everything is being mistreated. We're trying to get justice. All these people that's walking up saying stuff, even if they don't mean it, if they're being a puppet for somebody. The thing that they're saying is about justice. And that's what we know we have a problem with injustice and terrorism in this country coming from white people, mainly from white people. So, yeah, I had a white fella tell me today, you know, it's speaking about us comparing, you know, we compare ourselves to each other and get chains and stuff like that. And, you know, I was saying the same thing. It has nothing to do with that. It's not like we're coming at you because we want to be racist. We're coming in too because y'all white people are at the top of everything. And if this system is so messed up, who else to point to? Who else to blame? So when somebody comes up and they're speaking about justice, saying they want some justice, you know, they could be a white person. It could be somebody, white, it could be whoever. But as long as they're talking about justice and doing something about it and you know, making a stand like he did, like the Rams did, like the gentleman from the college that protested and wouldn't play until the chancellor got fired. You know what I mean?
Right, in Missouri. I think that was the college.
Missouri, you're right. And that's just what it's all about, justice. So, hey, Scott, you're not by yourself. I got very peeved. Matter of fact, I got out of my character. I said some things I shouldn't have said, but I'm tired. You know how I live anyways. I'm unemployed. I don't deal with the system. I don't deal with the system, period. I'm not fully unplugged, but I'm getting up. So It doesn't bother me to, you know, certain things. So I very much do agree with you. You know what I mean? It hasn't stopped. And it's going to keep coming out from all type of people. You're tired of it.
To me, it also spreads confusion, too. You know, that we're helping them to confuse people when instead of us focusing on the problem, we want to focus on the person who's telling other people about the problem. I mean, it's like we schizophrenic or something, or some of us are schizophrenic or something. You want people to acknowledge Black Lives Matter, and then when they stand up and acknowledge Black Lives Matter, then you talking about, oh, they ain't black enough. Well, who that? What? Are you looking for white people to stand up and say that? That's who you looking for, white validation that your black life matter? And it's not good enough if a half white self, a black self-identified person like Colin Kaepernick says it. You know, it's schizophrenic. So what do you want? And I'm not talking to everybody. Those people know who I'm talking to. Like I told Cleo Monago, I wasn't even directing my comments towards you. I was directing my comments towards Rodney Harrison. And so either you need to work on your reading comprehension skills, or either the way we say down south, the dog that yells the loudest is the one that got hit by the rock.
You better believe it. And that's what you said a mouthful, Scotty. We are schizophrenic, and you can't help but. No, I won't say you can't help, because you can't help it. You don't have to be schizophrenic. But those of us that are still plugged into the system, still, you know, working the same job, doing the same thing, thinking the same way, yeah, we are schizophrenic, because the system tells you don't do this, but then shows you through media, if you do that, you're gonna get some money. Like kind of like what John Henry Clark said about his dad said about when he came home with the money. If you work hard and be diligent, you can get this money too. But then he doubled back and cut in the dice game and came up. So it's like we're in a schizophrenic society. But if you unplug, if you pay attention, if you're about justice, mm-hmm. let me just say that. If you're about justice, you'll pull out of that. They people just want something to talk about. We're in a society where people just want to just run their mouth and just have a negative outlook towards things. Like the first thing they say is something negative. You understand what I'm saying? It's right. Always, oh, he's not dark enough. Oh, he shouldn't have said it this way. Oh, he shouldn't have did it because it was against the military. The military, that was just a whole nother thing. So,
Yeah, I talked about that yesterday with the rampant rape that goes on in the military. And then the fact that the NFL, these billionaire owners taking millions of dollars from the U.S. government to put on a military show of patriotism, they was getting paid for that. They only just now stopped taking the money.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing, Scotty. And all this hypocrisy, everything, in every aspect, all 9 points of human activity, hypocrisy. And they do it. And it is blatant. And I, like I said, I always think they just sitting back, just laughing. Like I was listening to the Anaki story, with Dave, come on Nick, listening to the story, and it just, that's what it sounded like. Just people, just a couple of characters sitting in the background, just looking at us, just laughing at us. Like these black people, they just cannot get it together.
And I also thought that Colin Kaepernick's comments were codified, you know? I'm thinking, hey, this dude must listen to Black Talk Radio, because he talk like some of the people that are associated with this network. He does not seem like he's real confused.
He sounds like a student, you know, a student of John Henry, a student of Scotty Reed, a student of Max Farkas, and you know, Francis Cresswell. He just, when I heard him talking, I didn't hear it at first, you know, listening to nothing else. I didn't hear it at first. So then when I went back and I listened to it, you almost know when you conscious, you can hear, you know when the reporters are gonna come. You know they're gonna come with the type of questions they're trying to elicit some kind of belligerence out of who they talking to, or some kind of, you know, get them to speak out of turn or in the wrong way. Man, he was all the way on point with everything he was saying. He was calm, he delivered it the right way. And I appreciate the brother for doing that, because you know, you got Cam Newton. You know, I haven't heard his comments, but you got this brother here who was really being hated on last year. I mean, to the point of it was ridiculous how bad they were talking about Cam Newton.
You
and
know
I heard
what?
He came out and said something about he doesn't see a problem in America with race or anything.
I'm gonna have to look up his comments to get the full context and hear exactly what he said, cause I think highly of Cam Newton for the very reasons that you said. Look, this young man does a lot in his community. He does a lot for those children in Charlotte, North Carolina. I mean, he go real hard, and it's genuine. You could tell it's not an act. It's not fake. Now, and the way that the racist media in this area will practice racism against him. And what have you, always bringing up, oh, he did this in college, or he did that, or he's this, or he's that. He stole a laptop. He, you know, just racism from the racist suspects on talk radio, sports talk radio in this area. But then when I heard that he said that, I was like, I don't even want to read it, because I think so highly of this young man, my heart might get broke. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, this could be my son. You know, if I had a son, I would want him to be like Cam. That's what I was saying. That's how I thought so highly of him, man. And then when I heard that, I did not want to read it. I didn't want to hear nothing about it. I didn't want anybody lessening my view of him. But again, he's still a young man. He's still learning. Right. And I think that he said what he said because he done been beat down by the racists all this time. Because he knows that. This is what I heard what he said. Again, I haven't looked it up myself. But he said, pretty much said that racism is a thing of the past or something like that, to that effect. That's what I heard. I haven't looked it up myself. Again, I told you the reasons why, because I don't want to think any less of this young man, and I still shouldn't, even if I read it, because then I saw comments that his father made. They had like a little some kind of high school football 7-on-7 tournament at his high school when he was going to school in Georgia, and his father made some comments to the media. And then I was like, and I saw his father's comments first, or heard his father's comments first, being trying to be all pro police and we're all just one of the same family, and you know, just not acknowledging racism and trying to be pro slave catcher. And so then when I heard Cam said what he said about it, I said, that's his daddy speaking. That ain't Cam speaking, because Cam knows racism exists, or else he wouldn't have went running down there to console the victims of the shooting or the mass killing of those people in that church in South Carolina. He went down there. It wasn't highly publicized. He wasn't looking for no publicity. Again, this is why I admire the young man so much. But he went down there and he met with some of the family members of the victims that the white racist Dylan Roof murdered. And so I know that he doesn't really believe that. I think that he's been beat down by racism and perhaps being influenced by his father.
That makes sense. I didn't know that his father made those comments like that. And you know, we are influenced heavily by our parents, you know, especially if they stay in and embedded in our lives. That's pretty much who we are, you know what I mean? So it's like that could be the case, and I would like to believe that is the case, because like you said, I think highly of Cam. Watching my kids last year, you know, they was on their run, you know, the dab and everything else, watching my kids excited about him, and you know, seeing the things he do, and just, he's a black man, you know what I mean? He's somebody, he was somebody positive, and he spoke positive, spoke well, educated. So, and like you said, it could be my son. I mean, I would like my son to be like that. So
yeah, and he has self-identified in the past as, although I don't use the term African-American, and I need to apologize because I have ridiculed in a way. I would say it was ridiculed, or I was saying people, I was insinuating that people are stupid who call themselves African Americans, because I don't want to be identified with anything America does. If I go overseas, I don't want them seeing me as an American and then kidnapping me and cutting my head off or something like that, because America has then bombed their country and used the drone to take out their entire family. So, you know, but people have a right to self-determination. Maybe they just don't see it the same way I do, and that's their way of identifying as African descendant people. So it was wrong of me to say something bad about them or insinuate something incorrect about them using that term, because I don't know the context of how they came to use that term, because I'm getting attacked. I just got an email last night. Somebody sent me an article yesterday morning about black consciousness. It was a very long article. It was a pretty good article too. So they sent it in and I published it. So somebody gonna send me an email talking about, can we stop using the word black? Can we just throw away that term? And I'm like, why?
No. The term that should be thrown away through education is African American or Negro. In my eyes, those are the terms that should be thrown away, because those are conquered terms. Those are terms, African American. We were, you know, some of us brought from Africa, mixed with, you know, we're breeded with those that were over here, and we've been conquered the whole time. So I don't want to be known as an African American.
Yes, and I understand that too. And I understand why you don't, because I don't want to be. I gave my reasons, but I would accept your reason as well. But I'm just saying, though, even though I feel that way, I should not be antagonistic towards those who still use that term, because they just may not have the information that I have or have the perspective that I have. And it's not because they want to, you know, they're seeking white validation or validation by this nation or any. They just, you know, that's a term that came up in the 70s. Yeah, and that's why they're using it.
Especially my generation, we were raised to call ourselves African American. Matter of fact, it was taught to us, you know, to call yourself black is like mediocre. To call yourself nigger is wrong. If you call yourself an African American, you take pride in that because of all the African Americans that were here, like Marcus Garvey and Huey P. And you know what I mean? But education says they weren't African American, so we shouldn't have been calling ourselves that. But that, like you said, that comes through education, through research, and you know, you can't criticize. I understand what you're saying. You know, to criticize somebody for calling themselves that term is kind of jumping the gun because they probably don't got all the information. That's right. How they self-identify.
But right.
We have to keep learning, man.
But at
we
least they ain't. At books. Least they ain't just calling themselves. Well, I don't believe in that. I'm just an American. Well, American is a nationality, dude.
I laugh when I hear that too, Scotty. Now I do. You know, at one point in time, I was all gung-ho too. You know, about 15 years ago, I was, yeah, man, America, we the strongest country, biggest Navy, and blah, blah, squad. But as I learned, and that's just what it takes. You have to open them books, man. Like Gus said from Miss Wilson, from Mother Wilson, reading is better than watching TV.
You know, and always. And one of the most important things that Colin Kaepernick said is that he, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, but he said that this isn't just a spur of the moment thing, that he's been thinking about these things for quite some time, having conversations for quite some time about racism, about the injustice in this country, and that, you know, as he's acquired more information, that is why he feels the way that he does. Not based off emotions, not based off of a feeling, not based off of because somebody told me so, but because I acquired more information. I thought that was very important.
That's codified. It is. It's codified. So
I just took umbrage, though, Brother Sin. I just took umbrage of black people.
You sure have.
Of black people.
And then on top of that, you light skinned, Scotty. You know, you like my brother. My brother's very, very light skinned. So I can just imagine in my mind, because I take offense when people say something about dark skin, because I'm dark. So I can just imagine how you felt, you know, seeing those responses and stuff like that. How can you not be black enough? What is black enough? Like Neely Fuller said, how close is to is close. You know what I mean? How black is black? So I don't know, man. People, I just continue to spread the word, spread the knowledge, and just hope we get it.
Yeah, and again, let me just say, I'm not angry with Cleo Monago or whatever. If he want to block me on Facebook, hell, I'm trying to minimize my time on Facebook anyway. Yeah, so, but I mean, hey, he took that action. He decided to block me. You know, when I brought up the fact that you the last person should be talking about some light-skinned privilege or casting aspersions on anyone when you're mistreated for being a homosexual within our community. So you need to shut up.
Butter biscuits be talking though, Scotty.
And I mean, I looked at him as being conscious. He know about Welsing. He know about Fuller. He know about these people. And again, that's not to say that they have all the information or everything they put out is correct. But again, you know, I would think that he was conscious enough, as old as he is, to know that it's incorrect to mistreat other non-white people, people who self-identify as black simply based on the color of their skin. That's wrong, man.
That's wrong. That's dead wrong.
And not what they do. Not what they do. Now, Colin Kaepernick got up there and he was like, you know, acting like Drew Brees is acting or Rodney Harrison.
Oh, I heard about him.
Yeah, I would be all on in Colin Kaepernick's case. you know, in terms mm-hmm. of my commentary or whatnot. But he didn't do anything that's incorrect. He didn't say anything that was incorrect. He didn't do anything to harm us as a people. So why do some black people got a problem with that?
I said, I think it's mainly because they have a fitting somewhere in this. Even the ones like the guy you talking about, even the ones that are conscious, they know about Welsing, they know about Neely Fuller Jr., they know these things, but you still have it unplugged. Logic is just that. You can't get around logic. And if you know, period, treating somebody bad on for whatever reason, treating them bad is wrong. You should, in my eyes, you should have an open opinion. You should have an open... If you're not open... Like in your case, make a comment and then you get blocked. That means you ain't about what you say you about. You know about these people, but you ain't about correcting injustice. To me, you just one of those people like to blow hot air, like to talk a lot and all this other stuff, but you don't really believe in that. You just pushing that agenda for whatever reason. You got ulterior motives, and it ain't to help our people. It ain't to help injustice.
Because I played that clip, and I might have the clip right now. Again, I get teachings or I study many different authors, many different people that have spoke on racism. So my views are informed by many different sources. I don't agree it was things Malcolm X said that I didn't agree with, that Malcolm X then later even changed his own mind about. You know, so nobody's perfect. We're always learning, or we should always be learning, acquiring more information to make sure that we have an informed or educated view, you know. But I'm starting to find, though, a lot of people that talk that talk, they don't walk that walk.
They're not walking that walk.
They not.
It's too hard. It's too hard in my view, because to unplug, like how you have unplugged and how others have unplugged, that's one of the hardest things, especially when you getting gratification out of the system. When you receiving out of the system, even though you know it's wrong, you getting something out of it. And you don't have to necessarily go and plant your own food. You don't have to go out and, you know, kind of do things on your own. You were relying on the luxuries of the system. So it's like, yeah, I know it's wrong, but, man, I got to eat too. It's that same mentality. And I can't say I'm like you or like anybody else, but I try and listen to people. Even people that come with a bad view or view I'm not particularly feeling,
you'll hear them out.
To it. Yeah, right, to see what I can get out of it, because I know thy enemy. Yeah. So it's become just that simple to me, Scott. I like to hear people's views and hear different things. That guy, and you know, he gonna receive a lot of backlash. I should say.
Who, Rodney Harrison?
Rodney Harrison and Drew Brees. But I'm talking about the guy that blocked you on.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people that was on that thread did agree with what I had to say about it's wrong for black people to mistreat other black people based on their skin color and or based on whether or not they have two black parents or one white parent or any other thing. It should be based on what they do. It should be based on their actions. We shouldn't take on the characteristics of our oppressor, where we're mistreating people the same way they mistreat people. And so, you know, I don't know what upset him. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I brought up the fact that he a same, what did he call it? He came up with the term same gender loving black man. I'm like, all the oppression. A same gender loving black man. That's the term he came up with. Other words, he a homosexual.
Right. Even that in itself, and I'm not judging, but I am who I am. Even that in itself, if you believe in justice, I'm not saying you can't be homosexual or bisexual, whatever. If you believe in justice, constantly coming out of your mouth would be, or constantly coming into your brain would be, what is homosexual? Where does this come from? What is this feeling? I see it's not natural because you either born one way or another. What is this? Where is it coming from? And in my eyes, that's what, if he's conscious and he knows about, you know, justice and you know, white supremacy, things like that, in his mind and coming out of his mouth should always be, where do these things come from? I know it's not natural. Is it something perpetuated by this system? Does it come from white supremacy? Does it come from Africa? What is it? I get the sense that this guy is just all about, you know, making a hot air point.
His work in the past, and I've actually interviewed him on this program about different issues. He does talk a lot about racism. I particularly pay attention to his revelations about racism in the quote-unquote gay community, and how he talk about them gay white men practicing racism against the non-white gay people and all of that. So again, he talks about racism. He doesn't so much be putting the gay stuff in your face all the time. So I appreciate the work that he has done on behalf of black people. But he seemed to have a problem, some kind of unconscious hatred for light-skinned black people. And he seemed to think that we got it better than our darker brothers and sisters.
And you cannot, if you believe in justice, you cannot even prepare, even if it don't come out your mouth, you cannot give that sense. If you pick that up from him, from his comments and stuff like that, he does not believe in justice. I would love for him to come on your program and kind of like have a questionnaire with him, you know, ask him questions and stuff like that, because I know with him, and like I said, he's probably done good work, but how many white supremacists or would consider themselves white supremacists have done very good pieces on racism, talking That's about true. Racism and even talking about how to battle it and you know, is it relevant and stuff like that. So
I don't think he's a proxy. I can't say for sure. I don't think he's a proxy. The work that he's engaged in, I just can't call it. I just know this is the second time that he done talked about light-skinned black people got some kind of privilege or something. Like his suffering is worse than mine, you know, or whatever. You know, my little brother light-skinned, my cousin light-skinned, they've been enslaved. He spent 10 years in slavery. So what kind of light-skinned privilege he had when them white folks without any evidence convicted him of
it? He wasn't light enough?
Yeah, I guess not, man. I guess he wasn't light enough.
You can't be light enough. You either white or you ain't.
Exactly. You know, and I see these things and I think about how I have been mistreated. And I'm like, well, damn, this light-skinned privilege? How do I invoke my light-skinned privilege? Is there some kind of code word that I need to say to white people to get my white privilege? You know what? What is it? Oh, I know what the code word is. If I come out my mouth with anti-blackness and act like I hate black people, that's the code word. Then I will get some privilege. But then it don't matter if I'm dark as the deepest chocolate, or, you know, if I'm vanilla white, you know, it don't matter.
Mm-mm. Not in that sense, it don't matter.
It matters what I'm going to do for them.
If you can help the system, it don't matter what color you are. They're going to use you for as far as they can use, and then they're going to cast you to the side. I wouldn't be looking for this fella, and he keeps catching the backlash in the quote-unquote gay conscious black conscious community, because you're gonna always catch that. You're gonna catch that from them anyways, because they want to use you, period, point blank. Fetishing is real.
And I really believe that. And what gets me though is that I defended this guy.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I defended him. I don't believe in mistreating nobody. I don't care if he take, you know, thing. I don't know how he have sex with other men, but I don't mistreat people based on that. And I never have, you know, and I ain't never been curious about it either. So let's not get that twisted. But I just
not at all.
I just ain't never mistreated nobody based on that. One time I did. when I was a kid, when I was about 15 years old, and all the guys in the neighborhood would be picking on the gay guy in the neighborhood. And when I would see him, I'd be like, "You little faggot," and calling them names and mistreating him. And then later in high school, me and this guy became good friends. He became good friends and whatnot. He started hanging with me. Then he started dating women and whatnot. But he then would tell me, you know, all them guys that called me faggot and stuff, they were knocking on my window at night.
That's how they go. That's how they go in the hood, man. Between, you know what I mean? Black people know that's how it goes. The one that, like you just said, the one that make the loudest noise is the one that got hit.
Yeah.
The ones that be talking the most about them, always downing them and all that, I found the ones be creeping late night. And it's just, to me, understanding it now, it's all a part of mistreating people.
He gave me some insights. Now, this is before Dr. Tyrone Hayes came out with his work, you know, where he was showing how atrazine, that chemical that they use in weed killers and it's ending up in the food supply, how that is creating feminist males or males with, you know, they sexuality is all screwed up by biological warfare is what I call it. And so that, you know, and then my friend from high school, when I talked to him, I was like, "Well, why was you engaging that kind of stuff?" Man, he got raped when he was a little boy. Somebody raped him, man. And he, another man, a man raped him.
And that's what we're talking about. I'm sorry to cut you off, Scotty. And I wanted to ask you about this before. A show that used to come on Black Talk, on Black Talk Radio, used to come on Sunday. Shift the Paradigm with I forget her name.
Zion.
But Sister Zion, right. She had a show one time speaking about rape or pedophilia, sexual misconduct inside our community and dealing with Black community. And I've come to find out, I ain't did no dissertation, no research like that, written down nothing, notes and stuff. But I've come to find out with every Black person, male or female, woman or man, that considers themselves gay, bi, transgender, anything in that spectrum, they have all had some kind of trauma.
Yeah, trauma. Yeah.
In their early lives. Yep. And I take that and I partner that with sexual trauma with chemicals that it found that it does grow,
make males have female hormones and genitalia. Right. I mean, yeah, it's crazy.
So, right. So you pair those two things in 70s, 80s, 90s. You in 60s too, I think. But if you pair those two things through generations, you're gonna have have us coming out. Oh yeah, I'm gay. Oh yeah, I'm bi. In my eyes, none of them are gay. By their own decisions, none of them are gay. I can't say that for certain, but in my eyes, my opinion, none of them are gay, bi, anything like that. If they got to their traumatic issues and dealt with them, you'll see. I know so many of them. So many of them.
And that's why I don't mistreat them, Sin. I see them as victims.
I said, right. Okay. You're right about that. They are victims. But so many of them switch back, Scotty. So many of them switch back from being whatever they classify themselves as to back being straight.
Oh, yeah. I ain't talking about those kind. I'm not talking about the kind who just want to have sex and don't care who they have it with or what they have it with. We got some sick people like that in this world. But, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I come across them, too. The one, like my friend was telling me from high school, the ones that was acting all straight and had girlfriends and stuff knocking on his window at night trying to get him to come out.
Right. Not those. I'm talking about the ones that have been gay, consider themselves gay for years, decades. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that have come on the other side, you know, after 15, 20 years of their lifestyle, have come back.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I got you.
You feel me? And to me, like I said, I'm not a scientist, no dissertation, none of that type of stuff. But to me, my spirit says they never were that. This is all something that's perpetuated by this system through chemical means, through sexual trauma, through
programming.
Yep, all that stuff has been. They've been programmed to be that way. They have not. Media is the most powerful entity on the planet. It has the ability to make the guilty look innocent and the innocent look guilty. Ain't that what Malcolm said?
Yep. It is. So they have you engaging in all kind of behavior. If you got a weak mind and your mind is unguarded, it will have. But I just brought all that up to say is that's why I don't mistreat gay people, quote unquote gay people or homosexuals, because I don't know what their background story is. I don't know if they was raped as children by men. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know if they've been overexposed to certain chemicals, and I don't know. I don't know. But I do know that I should not be mistreating anyone who is not mistreating me. Now, if you want to talk about them, like some people try to say, well, they go after children and all that. Well, then we'll get them when they harm a child. We'll get them.
Mm-hmm.
But if they just dealing with themselves and other adults, you ain't got nothing to say to them. I mean, you could talk to them. You could, because again, I had conversations with them. You know, why are you, how did you get into this? You know, what happened? And some of them opened up and they shared with me, you know. But again, if we should not be mistreating anyone, period. Cut and dry right there. Don't mistreat nobody. Treat everybody the way you would want to be treated. If you got a gay son, even though you don't want your son to be gay, how would you want people to treat your gay son? Would you want them to string him up by the neck and kill him and castrate him?
Not me personally, but I know some of those that is just that easy.
Yeah, some of them are. You right.
You know, don't even care. They will kill their own. They will eradicate their own just for that purpose. You know, and you know, to each his own. But I tend to believe, and I have some harsh views about some things, but I believe in justice overall. You could be a white person that's been practicing racism all your life, but if you wake up one day and you say, you know what, I'm done with this. I realize what's going on, and I'm gonna make a change. And you start to make that change, you start to actually hit the pavement, as they say, and
right.
You know, do it on your own to change it. I can agree with you, and I can roll with you. Yeah. It's just the injustice that I have a problem with.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it boils down to, individual action. It boils down to individual action. I think I got the clip, Need Fuller, saying that justice ain't about a skin color. You can wave all the red, white, red, black, and green flags all you want to. You can proclaim your black nationalism all you want to. But if you don't believe in practicing justice, then that don't mean nothing. It don't mean nothing. Whatever you call yourself, it don't mean a thing if you ain't practicing justice.
I hear you, Scott.
And it boils down, and that's so simple. That's so simple. There shouldn't be anything that anybody should be confused about that. It's about what you do. And I feel like that's the only way that we will end this system is if individuals start standing up and saying, no, I will not help you mistreat that person. No, I'm not going to go along with it. And actually, if you do it, I'm going to tell on you. I'm going to tell them, and I'm going to tell them I'll go to court with them. It's going to take everybody. It's going to take individuals coming together that believe in practicing justice. And when we outnumber those who believe in practicing injustice, then when we outnumber them, then we can overcome, I feel. But I feel for the most part right now, the reason that they are thriving, the system is still in place, is because either we are cowards and we just want to keep our heads down so we don't get hit, or we don't want to put nothing on the line to stand up for justice, and we just go about our day just trying to avoid controversy or any kind of trouble or whatnot, you know. And then we have those who actively help people practice injustice. Go along with it. And right now, it's more them than it is people who want to practice justice, in my mind, at least.
Well, you know, I would have to say, yeah, it is. It's evident that it is, because if not, we would be past this by now. If it was more of us, if it was more people that believed in justice, we would be so far past this. This would be a dead issue. We won't have this problem. And like I say, it ain't going to stop until everybody be willing to say, you know what, man, let's do it. You know what I'm saying? I'm all in. Let's do it. I don't want nothing else from the system. I just want justice. That's it.
Well, see, we want to, and I'm speaking in general terms here, we want to put it all on one individual. Or one organization, a black messiah to save us, when we had the power to save our damn selves collectively. We shouldn't be waiting on the next Malcolm X or the next Marcus Garvey or the next Huey Newton or the next Bobby Seale. We shouldn't be waiting on that. No. Be a leader in your community. Be a leader of one. And stop practicing racism and stop helping people get away with practicing racism. Stand up, speak out. Right. Just like Colin Kaepernick, if all those other athletes, and I'm not even going to put it just on the black ones, I'm going to put it on all of them. If the majority of them said we stand with Colin because what he said is right and what he's doing is just and we stand with him, not to mention the national anthem is racist and it talks about the killing of black people, and keeping them slaves. Yes, it does.
Yes. You find that out. You have to listen to the lyrics. I'm a music person.
Right. You got to listen to the lyrics.
To the lyrics. And if you listen to them, it speaks about that. And then if you know about racism in this country, you know it has to be directed at you and your people.
Yeah. This dude, Francis Scott Key, was a slaver, a racist. And his anthem was bragging about, we didn't kill these enslaved Africans who thought they was going to get some freedom, but all they found was the grave. You know? And so I never thought about that. But again, I ain't never sang the national anthem. I would stand up, but I would never put my hand over my heart. The only reason I stood up is because I was trying to be polite. You know? Just like when I was in Saudi Arabia, when they had the times for prayers, instead of me just keep walking around downtown while people stopping and praying, I just sat my butt down and wait till they got done, just showing respect. But I ain't never known the words of the national anthem. I only read the words to it this year, because when I was in grade school, we were singing the black national anthem.
Oh, y'all sung the black national anthem. Okay.
Yeah, lift every voice and sing.
We sung that something. We sang that on Friday, but we was just saying My country, tis of thee, sweet land. We was just saying that. We never sung the national anthem. The only time I did it was like my first couple of years in elementary. And, you know, saving grace or whatever it is,
seeing that millions of people who go to these sporting events stand up and put their hand over their heart and mouth the words is because they've been trained since children to do that. It ain't doing because they feel. I feel for the most part, they ain't doing it out of a sense of gratitude because they've been bestowed certain rights and privileges and things of that nature, you know. And I'm talking about non-white people. Non-white people are doing it because they were trained to do it and it's expected of them to do it, because you see what happened when you don't do it.
You can tell that, Scotty, because look how many people. Is it supposed to be the national anthem, and it's supposed to be a lot of, you know, people happy to be Americans. You go down the line, if you go through a million of them, probably 100,000 of them know the words of the national anthem. Nobody knows the words to it. It's like it's like a spiritual, like, just, I don't even want to know this song, you know what I'm saying? Through generations, they teach it to us, and we made the singing in school, but you still don't remember the words. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, it's...
But if Colin Kaepernick, if all those other players, let's say 60% of the other NFL players came out and expressed support for what he did and what have you, and he's not standing alone, it wouldn't be nothing. They wouldn't dare attempt to do nothing to him. They wouldn't.
How about the Spartans?
Huh?
If whoever sponsors Colin Kaepernick, how about if I think one of his sponsors is Gatorade or somebody like that.
Yeah.
What if one of the sponsors stood up and said that? We stand in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick. We may not necessarily agree with his view or whatever, but we stand in solidarity with him because what he's saying is right. Or whatever, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I don't even see how anybody could credibly disagree with anything he said. Everything he said can be backed up by hard numbers and statistics.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the magic word you said, credibly. It's not about credibility. It's
right.
All about me. centralization just being... Whatever is popular, whatever's popping, that's what's going on. Credibly, though, no, you can't disagree with what he says because everything is backed up. It's logic. Everything is backed up.
Mm-hmm. But, that's what they do, though. They get us. What I'm saying is he's vulnerable alone. Even though he said he's well prepared to handle any consequences. He don't really care if he lose sponsors. He don't care if the 49ers cut him. He done made his millions over the last 5 years. He said he don't care. What he cares about is being able to look at himself in the mirror and see a man and not a coward. That's what he cares about. And so if all these other players stood up, not even all of them, but 60% of them stood up and said, you know, he's right. This happened to my family member, or I know somebody. This happens in my neighborhood where I'm from and all this and that. So we stand in solidarity with Colin. It ain't nothing that them people in charge of the NFL could do to Colin. Number one, what he did ain't in no contract, and it ain't in no rule book. You can't force people to pay homage to a flag or anything like that. But the reason they wouldn't do anything is because then they would be afraid of all of these black athletes leaving the sports field plantation. And now you know what I'm saying? Now you ain't got nobody to help you make all the money you making.
Right. That's where the fight at. That's where if we could get that, because all of the games, all of the ball games, as Mother Wells would say, all of them would stop immediately. Because, let's just be honest again, we perpetuate all, to me, entertainment is perpetuated by black people. Even though they ain't invite them to the Grammys or Emmys or whatever it was,
Oscars.
They ain't invite them to Oscars. Yeah, you cannot do anything in this country without black people and have it be successful. In my eyes, besides white supremacy, when it comes to entertainment, in my eyes, you cannot. If you want to make money, true revenue, profit, you have to have black people because we the best at everything. In my view. So it's like if we could get them to be on that same if the athletes, black athletes, but all athletes really would think in that way and would link up in that way, all of the ball game, all of that stuff would change.
Yeah, we saw it. We saw it with not just the one athlete at Missouri, but the whole damn team stood in solidarity. And what happened? They got their demand met. What was that demand? Fire this racist chancellor.
That's right, and they sure got rid of him. Man, I want all of us. Of course, you know I'm thinking about the LeBron James and even though he had a bad season, RG3s and you know all these guys like this. I just if they can have their own league, you know what I mean? I know I'm not the first person to say this. This is an echo. But they can have their own everything. All of these things will be theirs.
Their own shoe companies and not just a spokesman for Nike or Reebok. Or they have their own shoe companies, man. It's just time. Yep. And again, we're mostly talking about young black men. We don't know what their education level is. We don't know how their parents raised them. But I am at least happy to see more consciousness starting to manifest itself in their actions, and hopefully that will spread to the other ones.
I think it will because the system of white supremacy is only ramping up. It's only getting worse and worse. The visual lynchings are steadily coming. You know what I mean? The racists, they're getting who they want. You know, to go into whether it's Hillary or Donald. They're getting who they want in the White House. You know what I mean? I see everything. You hear the echoes from the senators to the police chiefs to
right.
whoever saying that, oh, it's not a problem, racism is not a problem, you know, just comply and all, black or white, and in between. So the system is only, getting worse. So I think that more and more athletes, especially athletes, entertainment period, but especially athletes, I think are going to come out with these views. And even some of them, I think, are going to have, I'm waiting on the boys from, the guys from the Seahawks to come out, because you know they have some very pointed opinions. And
Richard Sherman backs Colin Kaepernick. I don't know if he agrees with everything he said, but I did read a headline that said Richard Sherman was backing Colin Kaepernick. I just didn't have time to read the article. But listen, Sim, we got to get out of here, man. Tando Radio Show is coming up. I know you like listening to that program, so I know you'll stay tuned, and I hope the rest of the listeners will stay tuned as well. But thank you for your comments, brother. Anytime, okay?
Okay.
All right. That was
Q&AQ is cleared.
That was one of our family members down there in the state of Florida. Always good to hear from. As I stated, Tando Radio Show is coming on immediately following. Thank you all for giving me the time of day and listening to me rant about the mistreatment of light-skinned black people and black people with white parents. When they try to stand up and do what's right and practice justice, as many people say, we wish that more of these people would stand up and fight against the system of injustice and racism. And then when they do, then we get schizophrenic and now we won't attack them for not being black or having a white parent, instead of backing up what the stand that they took. That's schizophrenia. But again, I'm not mad at you. I understand that we need a lot of mental health treatment in this country, a lot of it. So I understand. I'm not mad at you, but I'm gonna speak as a light-skinned black person. You're not gonna mistreat me, you're not gonna disrespect me or any person that's practicing justice based on their skin color, because now you're really practicing some proxy racism. Anyway, that's my program. Y'all be safe out there behind these enemy lines. Remember, they always trying to make new slaves. Don't be a new slave, all right? Do everything you can to prevent that from happening. So you got to be codified. You got to move in silence sometimes behind these enemy lines and just do all things that you can do to improve your life, the life of your family, and the life of your community, improve your community. But this one thing, though, one important thing, do not be walking around here with a spirit of fear. Do not fear these people. There's nothing to fear. Nothing to fear. Can bad things happen to us? Well, hell, yeah, people die. Casualties happen during war. But if we really want to attain the goal, and the goal is a system that treats everybody with justice and affords everybody liberty, then it's worth dying for, in my opinion. So don't, while I'm saying be cautious and move behind the enemy lines, I'm not telling you to be afraid of these people. And I just want to make that clear. Be safe out there. Peace and blessings to all.